Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Tonight, they shook hands, they smiled, and then President Biden and his Russian counterpart got down to business. ABC's chief White House correspondent, Cecilia Vega, begins our coverage.
Hey, Byron, good evening to you. Before both men started this meeting today, they had both said they agreed that U.S.-Russia relations were at an all-time low. By the time the day had ended, they had shaken hands. They called this entire summit productive. They said there was no hostility here in Geneva today. President Biden says he confronted Putin over election interference, over human rights, over Alexei Navalny and his fate. And on those issues of cyber attacks, the president says he did not issue any threats, but he did warn Putin that the United States has significant cyber capabilities of its own, including giving Russia a list of 16 very important facilities, areas, the president said, of critical infrastructure that should be off limits to attack, from energy sector to the water supply.
Thank you, Cecilia. After meeting for several hours, Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin both calling the summit productive.
President Putin and I had a share a unique responsibility. Manage the relationship between two powerful and proud countries. A relationship that has to be stable and predictable.
Both sides expressed their intention to understand each other and to seek common ground.
Today's summit in Geneva follows a long and unresolved list of grievances, from Russian cyber attacks.
White House, as we said, issuing that stern warning for Russia.
To meddling in U.S. elections.
We saw some foreign nations, Russia and Iran, attempt to probe for voter registration information.
Americans stuck in Russian jails on charges they deny.
I'm asking for help now.
And repeated violations of human rights. The high-stakes face-to-face meeting, the most anticipated of Joe Biden's young presidency, and an opportunity to reset when relations between the U.S. and Russia are set to be at their lowest since the Cold War.
I think it went as planned. I think everybody played the role they wanted to play. Joe Biden came here wanting to set down some lines and tell Vladimir Putin what he thought and what he shouldn't do. Vladimir Putin wanted to do the same thing. He wanted to appear in front of the world press. He did that. So I think in that sense, they got what they wanted.
The two leaders came together at an 18th century villa on the shores of Lake Geneva. The Russian president, known to make world leaders wait, arriving on time for this meeting. Compare, if you would, Biden's approach to Putin as compared to Trump.
Donald Trump wanted to be his buddy. He loves that sort of back and forth with these guys, with a Kim Jong-un or a Putin.
And Biden?
I don't think Biden is looking for a relationship. I think Biden played absolutely out of a diplomatic playbook. He wanted to go in there. He wanted to tell Vladimir Putin what he intended to do, what he didn't want Vladimir Putin to do.
One of the biggest issues before the meeting, the American support for Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. Over the Rhone River in Geneva this morning, protesters hung a banner with an unmistakable message: Navalny poisoned, and still no investigation. How come, President Putin? ABC's Rachel Scott explains what happened next.
So I'm standing there in this long line, mostly with members of the Russian press corps, as well as some aides to the Kremlin. And when they turned around and saw that banner that was there, loud rumblings, people let out a loud sigh. I visibly remember one of the Russian press aides rolling her eyes. And then within just a few minutes, we saw a police boat arrive. They took that banner down.
That image of Navalny making a heart with his hands came from a gesture he made to his wife before he was led away to prison camp. In February, the fierce Putin critic was sentenced to 2 years and 8 months for violating the terms of his probation from an old sentence in 2014, already found to be unjust by the European Court of Human Rights. Prison officials claimed he had violated parole by failing to check in on multiple occasions, including while he was in Germany recovering from the nerve agent poisoning that nearly killed him last August. But last week, a Russian court outlawed Navalny's group, branding it an extremist network. Rachel Scott was one of the few American journalists able to ask Putin questions today. When she asked him about human rights abuses, the Russian president deflected repeatedly.
The list of your political opponents who are dead, imprisoned, or jailed is long. Alexei Navalny's organization calls for free and fair elections, an end to corruption. Mr. President, what are you so afraid of?
The organization that you mentioned has publicly called for mass disorder. They have publicly called for breaking the law. America just recently had very severe events after well-known events after the, after a killing of an African American. And an entire movement developed known as Black Lives Matter. I'm not going to comment on that, but here's what I do want to say. What we saw was disorder, destruction, violations of the law, et cetera. We feel sympathy for the United States of America, but we don't want that to happen on our territory.
You didn't answer my question, sir. If all of your political opponents are dead in prison, poisoned, doesn't that send a message that you do not want a fair political fight?
As for who is killing whom or throwing whom in jail, people came to the U.S. Congress with political demands. 400 people, over 400 people had criminal charges placed on them. They face prison sentences of up to 20, maybe even 25 years. They're being called domestic terrorists. I'd like to stress once more that we sympathize with what happened in the United States, but we have no desire to allow the same thing to happen in our country.
Naturally, the president of the United States disagreed with that assessment.
That's a ridiculous comparison. It's one thing for literally criminals to break through cordon, go into the Capitol, kill a police officer, and be held unaccountable. And it is for people objecting and marching on the Capitol and saying, you are not allowing me to speak freely. You are not allowing me to do A, B, C, or D. And so they're very different criteria.
Cyber attacks, another critical issue between the two countries, from Russia's meddling in the last two presidential elections to its role in the 2020 SolarWinds hack on U.S. government systems and its support of other rogue hacking operations.
Russia seems to be a first amongst equals when we're talking about the most critical threats that are being launched via the cyber front, and whether it's the Russian government or these criminal groups.
Today, President Biden relating that he confronted Putin on the string of ransomware attacks, including oil giant Colonial Pipeline.
I looked at him and said, well, how would you feel if ransomware took on the pipelines from your oil fields? He said it would matter.
The Colonial breach caused the shutdown of more than 5,000 miles of pipeline along the East Coast, leading to fuel shortages and panic at the pump.
Everywhere I go, it's bags over the gas pumps.
Even though Putin continues to deny Russia engages in cyber warfare, Biden gave him a list of 16 critical infrastructure targets that he considers off limits.
I pointed out to him we have significant cyber capability. And he knows it. He doesn't know exactly what it is, but it's significant. And if, in fact, they violate these basic norms, we will respond. I think that the last thing he wants now is a Cold War.
But there was one topic both sides seemed to agree on, a prisoner swap.
We discussed this. There could be some ground for compromise. Russian Foreign Ministry and the U.S. State Department will work in this direction.
We're going to follow through with that discussion. I am not going to walk away on this.
Two Americans, Marine veterans Paul Whelan and Trevor Reed, who both claimed they had been taken as political hostages in Russia, pleaded with President Biden for their release, recording audio messages from prison ahead of today's summit.
I spent my whole life in the service of my country, and I would appreciate it if my country would help to bring me home.
I implore you to bring this appalling case of hostage diplomacy to an end.
Whelan was arrested in 2018, allegedly for spying, found guilty of espionage, and sentenced to 16 years behind bars.
Paul, I'm from ABC News. Do you want to say something?
Sure, no way.
I don't think they want me to say anything.
A year later, Reed was arrested after a drunken night out, charged with assaulting two police officers and sentenced to 9 years in prison.
I have no idea what their motives would be, but this is clearly political.
But today, the 29-year-old's parents are pleased Biden brought up their son with Putin.
It's huge, and I just hope that it continues on, the momentum continues, and then we have the last big final step for him to come home.
One step forward in what may be a long road, It's a sentiment the American president seems to agree on.
This is about how we move from here. We'll find out within the next 6 months to a year whether or not we actually have a strategic dialogue that matters.
President Biden came bearing gifts, presenting President Putin with a crystal bison, as well as a pair of his trademark aviator sunglasses. Coming up, where does this all lead? I'll ask our political roundtable.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Their much-anticipated summit was just the beginning. Presidents Biden and Putin, during their very short time together, every move scrutinized. But first summits rarely produce results. It's what happens next that matters most. Earlier tonight, I spoke with former Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel and former Trump Justice Department spokesperson Sarah Isger. Welcome, and Sarah, this is your first night on Nightline. We're so honored to have you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Ron, first question to you. Joe Biden has called Vladimir Putin a worthy adversary. How did Biden do today?
Well, first of all, I think you have to put the trip within the context of the whole week. And I think it was a very good week for the president, and it made Americans feel good about themselves. So domestically, it was very good. And then I think our relationships, it was very good. I mean, he got NATO to endorse a series of things that he had been pushing, showing again that America can lead the coalition on both Russia, China, and other issues. And I think sitting with Putin, I think the biggest thing I would say today that was very important is he said, and I'm surprised nobody really followed up on this. Here are the 16 things that if you touch these sectors in a cyber attack, you will have a response. He drew red lines around a cyber attack that had never really been done yet by a president of the United States.
Sarah, certainly some muscular words from the president today, but who do you think won, or can each side claim progress?
Vladimir Putin wants to be considered an equal of the United States and China. So getting to sit down with the president of the United States, as he's gotten to do with past presidents as well, that is his win. That's all he needs. Biden, unfortunately for him, has a much, much higher bar to claim a win. You know, as Rahm said, he can talk tough, he can set these red lines, but all that's doing is setting up what will Biden do the next time there's a cyber attack, and there will be a next time.
Rahm, Putin said he saw some, quote, glimmer of trust today. A lot of American presidents have met with Putin, some making progress, others not. Do you see any glimmers of trust after today?
I would not measure this by a singular meeting. I would measure this of what comes out of the meeting, what are the working groups, et cetera. And again, Sarah's right, there will be another attack. So the real measure here will be at about a year from now, we'll know whether there are glimmers of hope, there's some levels of trust. I think the main thing, to be honest, Putin now has a predictable, seasoned political team. He can't run circles around like he did around Donald Trump, as you saw in Helsinki. And so to me, the measure of this will be in a year from now when we look through the rearview mirror. This was the beginning of something different.
Sarah, in talking about these cyber attacks, the president put down a red line. Do you think that it's something that Putin will honor, or as you said, it's his style to always kind of push the envelope?
No, I do not think Putin will honor that. He is testing Biden, and the question will be, does Biden do more than what President Trump did? Now, what's interesting, if you look back at the Trump years, Trump's rhetoric was very pro-Russia, very Putin-friendly, but what the Trump administration actually did was they sanctioned Russia over and over again. They had statements of condemnation from the State Department. The Department of Justice, when I was there, indicted 12 Russian intelligence officers for their election interference and for hacking the DCCC, the Democratic National Committee, Hillary Clinton's campaign. What is the Biden presidency, what does the Biden administration plan to do that is more than that, that will see results that the Trump administration frankly didn't see?
The way I would measure this, and I would take a look right now, is that they've met each other the first time. You got 16 measures. If, in fact, I don't believe Putin wants to be on the outside. The worst thing that happened was getting kicked out of the G8. The worst thing is also being seen as an ostracized in Europe, as seen as a dysfunctional force. He has major problems in Syria. He's got a problem now with Turkey. He's being sucked in what's happening in Libya. He does want this acceptance, as Sarah noted, but it's not just a meeting. He didn't get everything out of it. He got the first step of you could be an illegitimate player and seen around the world as somebody that kills people, ransom attacks, cyber attacks, et cetera, or you can be part of the legitimate world countries and powers that are respected and also part of that system. The president put some real guardrails and told them, and the follow-through was going to be the big piece of this.
Sure. Sarah, we gave the first question to Ron. We'll close out tonight with you. While Putin likes to think Russia is a big player in the national scene, isn't China a much bigger threat? And do you think Biden considers this a warm-up for negotiations with China's president?
I absolutely think that his team sees this as the opening gambit, a practice run, if you will. You know, if you're in like the Rocky movie, this is the guy Rocky fights early on to see if he can beat him. China is the big adversary. Xi has far more tricks up his sleeve and far more pieces that he can move on this puzzle that are more dangerous and more adversarial to American interests than Putin. So how Biden is able to deal with Putin, a fairly one-dimensional player, will be the practice run for how he deals with Xi, which is three-dimensional chess, absolutely. You know, Putin has issues in Ukraine that Biden needs to deal with. That is, frankly, still far, far easier than dealing with Taiwan, than dealing with the genocide that is happening with the Uyghurs compared to Putin's human rights violations. So I hope that the Biden team got their sea legs under them this time because there are much bigger things up ahead.
Sarah, again, welcome to Nightline. Thank you both for your time tonight.
Thank you.
The bill is passed.
And coming up, days before the anniversary, a new holiday. And finally tonight, while President Biden was on his way back from that historic summit, the House of Representatives made history of its own. By a vote of 415-14, members voted to make Juneteenth the day commemorating the end of slavery, a federal holiday. June the 19th, 1865, the day that enslaved people in Texas finally heard that they had been freed 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. With the Senate already passing the legislation, President Biden is expected to sign the bill into law before Juneteenth this Saturday. And that's Nightline for this evening. You can catch our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here, same time tomorrow. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.